You're listening to a podcast from 702.
And the first issue I want to discuss this hour, this the second hour of the show, is of course the continued ban on the sale of cigarettes. What does that mean? You will remember a couple of weeks back I had spoken to the chairperson of Fair Trade Independent Tobacco Association, Sinenhla Ntlanguni, and that's because they have been involved in a matter between themselves and the President of the Republic of South Africa, as well as the Minister of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs. Well, that is a case that continues, and it's really interesting to see where that case will end up with, especially this past week. We now having a case that has in the High Court resulted in government regulations being declared not being rational, but the government will appeal that, not particularly good judgment. You would have heard Professor Pieter Post yesterday giving a viewpoint on that. But there are so many darn cases. You blink and there's a new challenge to the regulations. Who knows where they will all end up eventually. Well, I wanted to get back to the FITA case just to make sure that you and I are up to date with the latest in this lawfare between FITA and government, and understand as well what the key legal arguments are that are being made by each side. Today's turn is that of FITA chairperson Sinenhla Ntlanguni. Sinenhla Ntla, good morning to you, and thank you so much for agreeing to come on the show.
Morning, Eusebius. Thank you for having me on your show once again.
Before we talk about the nexus and substantive issues, let's talk process. From a process point of view, very simply, for the public who are not au fait with legal processes, where is this case at?
Well, currently, the state filed the answering affidavit in relation to the supplementary affidavit. They filed this on the 4th of June. The order had stated that they were to file it before the 3rd of, or not before the 3rd of June. They were late, but it didn't really cause much prejudice in as far as we're concerned. We had filed our supplementary founding affidavit and notice of motion on the 29th of May, following receipt as per the court order of 12 May 2020 of the state's reasons and record of decision. The next step is for us then to file our replying affidavit, which is due tomorrow, and thereafter the parties are to file heads by no later than the 8th of June, and the matter will be heard on the 9th and 10th of June before a full bench of the High Court in Pretoria.
Let's get into the actual core issues. The main issue here is obviously whether banning the sale of cigarettes is rational. That is still the most basic question that need answering, and presumably that is the core question that a court of law will have to adjudicate. Before we get into it, is that an accurate summary of what will happen in terms of legal adjudication?
Yes, that is quite accurate, Eusebius. I think that's where it boils down to. That is the most important argument that will be heard on the 9th and the 10th of June.
What is your response to government saying not only is the policy position that they currently have codified as a regulation rational, it continues by definition to be rational if it was rational all along. And the main reason is that smoking can lead to death, and we don't want that.
No, of course. Look, many other things can also lead to death. You've accepted that. I mean, that's why you have for instance, health warnings on packets of cigarettes. You have the same warnings on alcoholic beverages and many other items which are deleterious to oneself. And that's one of the first issues which we find difficult in as far as government thoughts, is that the arbitrary nature in which these regulations are implemented. And then if we have to go into the depths of the legal arguments that are raised by government, it's quite baffling, because they state in their own papers, certainly with some of their experts and even other medical reports that they rely on, that there is no link between smoking and COVID-19. We accept that there is harm that is suffered by one's lungs, especially if they've been a long-term smoker. But that can also not be undone by cessation of some 6 weeks. I mean, we have to accept that. And further, if we go further into the argument in as far as the health aspect, there's conflicting medical reports, and as far as that is concerned, it's stated by the respondents in their papers, and our experts also state the same, And we go further in as far as that is concerned, in that studies of late have actually shown that there is no causal link between smoking and COVID-19. And further, certain countries are now experimenting on whether potentially nicotine could potentially be a solution in as far as protecting or offering protection against the virus. But again, there's nothing conclusive. And what we state then is that in the absence of a proper reply by the first respondent explaining and justifying the necessity for the exclusionary measure, we will have established a proper case for the relief that we see. We know that during the lockdown period, there has been a deprivation of personal rights and freedom. Similar to many other deprivations of freedom, the onus would then be on the respondents to explain and prove that the exclusionary measures are justified. We do not feel that, in as far as the court cases currently stand, they have done so.
Yeah, there's a weird question here that I ventilated with you off air around burdens of proof, right? But let's set them aside and try and center truth and put the law aside for 1 second and take each of the points that you've raised in turn. The first being that at any rate, the cessation right now of smoking is not going to make a fundamental difference to the quality of my lungs. If I've been smoking for the last 20, 30, 40 years, 6 weeks of not smoking really is not going to make a difference to the odds of whether, if I were to be infected with COVID-19, I will get a really bad bout of it and maybe even die from it. But we don't know how long this thing will be around before there is a cure, proper treatments, better treatments, vaccinations. If it were to hang around for the next couple of years, say, for example, then that cessation, as you put it in your language, could make a fundamental difference, depending on what kind of time horizon we are talking about here. How do you respond to someone who say, Sinenhlanhla, you are correct in a sort of high school debating fashion, that when we're talking about people's lives, we're talking here about probabilities. And if one can increase the probabilities of longevity, then there's a basic meeting of the rationality threshold, because government is taking decisions under conditions of uncertainty. And that's what governments do routinely.
No, look, I understand. There's quite a long-winded answer I can give to that, Sujit. Firstly, I mean, just going with what government has stated over the last week and as far as the lockdown, we know that it's a short-term solution. I mean, they've been advised that the lockdown is now a blunt instrument. And they've stated, for instance, the Minister for the Presidency, Jackson Mthembu, says that shortly we will be moving into lockdown level 2, and they don't see the ban going beyond that. Now, that obviously then goes against some sort of a long-term solution were the virus to be around for a long time. So I think even government accepts that the ban cannot be sustained for much longer. But secondly, there are ways and means of doing what government has tried to do, because, I mean, there's a lot of psychiatric literature, for instance, that one can look at, which states that making smokers go cold turkey is very cruel. What you're in essence doing is that you then allowing, for instance, one of the effects of immediate cessation of smoking is that the immune system gets affected. And then there are many people who rely on smoking as a coping mechanism. So, for instance, people with anxiety, drug use issues, and many other ailments, they use smoking and the reliance on nicotine as some sort of a midway between either coming off the substances they were addicted to and going cold turkey. So what you've done there, and we've submitted this in our papers, that government could have perhaps offered alternatives to those people who rely on these substances prior to just implementing a ban which infringes on many rights of those particular people that rely on those or rely on nicotine as some sort of a solution to ailments that they may have. So we feel that even if government were to have the correct intention, they went about it in the wrong way. And I think this is echoed by a doctor recently who has the only peer-reviewed study around smoking and the coronavirus, who states that you cannot simply just, for the sake of policy and having good intentions, implement something like this without factoring the consequences that arise as a result of it.
But the conclusion of the present argument, and you've smuggled in two or three there, but let's pick them all apart. When you talk about, for example, the possibility that someone's immune system may not like cold turkey, then you've also just something that is just, I mean, really just showing empathy, that it is cruel to force someone to go cold turkey. Those are not reasons to stop the banning of the sale of alcohol, I mean, of cigarettes. Those are arguments that suggest government should have better harm reduction programs that take account the true nature of addiction. Shouldn't you be making a case for why cigarettes should be sold rather than critiquing government's poor understanding of what addiction is like? Because you may be right in the what you are implying about how poor government's understanding of addiction is and the behavior of addicts and why they will seek black market products anyway and how cruel it is to not have a rational harm reduction strategy. All of those things may be right, and public health advocates tell us that all the time. Those arguments don't help you.
No, I think they do, because they factor in the fact that there was no rationality behind this ban. I mean, that's one of the many arguments you raise. You further go into the international standard, where I think we discussed this off-air, Eusebius, that South Africa and Botswana seem to be the only countries worldwide that have implemented this ban. You know, and when we factor in the rise of the illicit trade, not only in as far as people smoking them because they're addicted to nicotine, but also the impact on the tobacco industry, in as far as, I mean, historically there have been challenges in as far as combating the illicit trade. What is now going to happen is that people are going to be accustomed to these cigarettes, which are far cheaper because they don't pay taxes. And what is going to happen is the legitimate tobacco industry in South Africa is going to slowly be booted out. Because as I stated to you earlier on, I think governments themselves accept that the ban is not sustainable long term. I think even the president on Sunday stated that they will shortly be lifting the ban on the sale of cigarettes. However, we do not know when that is. And of course, given the controversy of the last time the president made a similar statement, we cannot attach too much credence to that. So in short, I think that my submission is that there are many sort of considerations government should have gone through prior to implementing this ban, some sort of proportionality. I mean, we understand, for instance, if I may use this as an example, government had initially lifted the ban on the sale of cigarettes based on what we're assuming is medical evidence, and only U-turned it based on the comments of some 2,000 individuals that the Minister of Corporate of Government had stated. We then discovered that that was not in fact correct, and there was only some 450-odd people that had in fact opposed the reintroduction of the sale of cigarettes. So we're saying that even they may have at some point gone through some sort of medical evidence when they decided to lift the ban. So that issue in on its own, we feel, is problematic for government, because how did they explain why they lifted the ban initially?
Let's take a quick call. Michelle in Kyalami. How's it, Michelle?
Hi, how's it? Look, I just want to tell you, I'm a very healthy, fit person, train 2 hours a day, but I do have this nasty habit of smoking at night. Now, I smoke very, very mild cigarettes, 0.1 and 1, okay? And I don't smoke a lot. I only smoke at night. Now, people can get access to cigarettes. I have not as yet accessed strange brands with very, very high tar and nicotine content. However, I did find something that I'm now smoking 6%. 6% 0.6 and 6. So I'm now going on to a stronger cigarette. I can feel the effects. And what I've seen other people getting, where you have this tar content of 14%. The nicotine might be 1, but tar contents of 14, 18, it's just so frightening, the type of cigarettes that are now being sold out there at prices of 1,600 rand a carton and more. And what is happening here is that you are making people more ill with the illegal cigarettes that they're accessing than rather letting them have access, because people will smoke. I think that I've forgotten the Association for Anxiety and Depression said to the government, they put forward a thing, please do not take away cigarettes. People who are depressed and anxious need this. You can't just ask them to stop. And on top of that, you can't stop someone who's been smoking and for 40 years and then think that that's going to give you a health benefit.
Absolutely. It's been poorly thought through. I think that's pretty clear. Thanks for that, Michelle. Jay, good morning.
Hi, UCBS. How are you?
I'm well. Thanks so much for calling in. What do you want to say on this one?
I've got a lot to say, but I just want to, maybe throw a spanner in the works on just one issue. The issue with regards to how long one has been smoking and has managed to survive, all right, is a bit of a flawed argument. All right? And this is my take on it. My take basically is that it all depends on one's proclivity, all right, or inclination or propensity, all right, to weaker lungs. If somebody has been smoking for 20 to 30 years, all right, it means that somehow they've either developed a more immune system, all right, a better immune system that can take that kind of volume of smoke in their lungs. However, it could so happen that somebody who started smoking 3 weeks ago, all right, has got a genetically predisposed condition, all right, for weaker lungs, all right, and we don't know this. And so the argument that says that stopping somebody from smoking for 6 weeks, all right, it's got an impact, it's got no impact whatsoever on somebody's health, all right, is, I think, flawed. Secondly, I think that also the argument that if one has to take into cognizance the fact that there is no causal relationship between smoking and COVID-19, absolutely correct, but there is a direct causal relationship between mortality, all right, weaker lungs, and COVID-19, and we know that smoking does result in weaker lungs. I mean, that is indubitable, right?
Okay, let's hold on. We can't have all the arguments at the same time. Let's take each of Jay's 2 points. For some individuals, they may have a constitution that respond differently to others. And the second point, which is also interesting, is that there's always a confluence of factors that determine well-being anyway. And in that mix, smoking and weak lungs may well make a cameo appearance. No pun on cameo.
No, of course. Look, let me deal with that second point first. We've asked the government, for instance, for empirical data. And, I mean, worldwide, we have not seen any empirical data that has shown. I mean, we accept that smoking has an impact on the lungs, but what we're actually seeing, studies worldwide are showing a high percentage of diabetics, for instance, have been affected by the virus. So we accept at the beginning of the lockdown period, and at that point, we had not challenged the regulations. There was no clarity in as far as the virus is concerned. But as we have progressed in time, we are seeing more so what comorbidities are actually the ones that are creating bigger issues for people in as far as the virus is concerned. And we have not seen any studies that have linked smoking and the virus. I mean, we accept that it's not something that we can get away from, that smoking impairs one's lungs. But again, we have stated in as far as our engagements with government that show us the empirical data in as far as, smoking and its links to COVID-19 infection and or death. And that is not something that they are able to do. And I think just from that alone, I don't think that they can justify maintaining a ban of this nature.
Jay, do you accept that?
No, I do not accept that. All right. This is reminiscent of the AIDS, HIV, all right, and not knowing anybody who died of AIDS, but knowing people whose immune systems have been weakened and have died as a result of other diseases that have taken opportunity of weakened immune systems. All right. Especially with COVID-19, if one takes into cognizance the fact that this is a disease, all right, that attacks the respiratory system, and therefore what you should, any rational, reasonable person would want to do is to boost, all right, the immune system and protect their respiratory system, and therefore annihilate or eliminate, all right, any possibility of any cause, all right, anything that causes a weakened respiratory system. And I think this is where the argument, Leonard Friend's argument tends to get flawed. You are not going to find empirical evidence, all right, that speaks to a causal relationship between mortality rates as a result of smoking, right, from COVID-19. However, what you're going to find, right, is that the virus is efficient, all right, because it will attack anybody and kill most people that have died as a result of it. Have been people who have been found to have pre-existing conditions that have been weakened their immune systems.
Jay, can I ask you this question? How many countries in the world have banned the sale of cigarettes?
Sorry, are you asking me?
Yeah.
I'm not aware of any, except us.
Does that strike you as weird?
But what I'm aware of, right, is that the study in Italy, right, did point to the fact that a lot of the people who had passed away, right, at least, not a causal relationship, but were directly correlated, all right, to weakened respiratory system as a result of smoking and also as a result of the intakes of
there's no such a thing. I mean, I think government would have produced that study if that was the case. And we can debate this at length, but there's no such a thing. And I'll be glad if you can provide us with that study, because, I mean, then what you're basically saying is that even government forgot to do their due diligence. In as far as, you know, preparing for this court case. And I doubt that, I mean, a matter of this nature and this importance to government, they would have failed to do that. So that is not the case. And I cannot agree with him on that particular aspect. As you correctly state, we know that South Africa and Botswana are the countries that have banned smoking. And again, this is one of the arguments that we raise in as far as, you know, proportionality and, you know, looking at global standards and things of that nature.
Okay, well, I think let's finish the conversation after news headlines out just for 5 minutes. I want to keep Jay. I want to take Pinky's call. I can't take any more. The lines are going crazy. This is how much people are not indifferent to this conversation. So we'll just spend another 5 minutes if I may.
Eusebius McKaiser on 702.
Okay, so I want to get this right, Jay, and let's just close this because we've got to move on with our lives. Are you suggesting that there's a paper, or are you helping yourself to a paper that may or may not exist about this correlation that you're talking about? Jay, are you there?
Hello?
Okay, we'll see whether we can get Jay. Jay, can you hear me? Okay, we'll cut our losses with Jay. Pinky, good morning.
Hello.
Go ahead, Pinky. What do you want to say?
Yeah. I don't understand. My understanding is that the government said they suspend the sale of cigarettes, not ban. And according to the World Health Organization statement, there are 1.2 billion tobacco users in the world. 8 million die annually from direct cigarette smoke. 1.2 million non-smokers die from second-hand inhalation of cigarette smoke. Nicotine, it pollutes the lungs, the air sacs in the lungs. As the Italian doctor said, the coronavirus patients that he was nursing as emergency rooms, they demonstrated severe kind of pneumonia. He described this coronavirus that it's something that they have never seen before. It's like a severe type of pneumonia. Now, the African government was reasonable to could say, hey, out the sale of cigarettes, because cigarettes aggravate the severity of any respiratory disease. And we know coronavirus, it directly affects the lungs. So in my opinion, the government was reasonable. And I believe of the 1.2 billion tobacco users in the world, 80% are from low-income countries. So this addiction to cigarette smoke, I think the government of South Africa has a responsibility to go to all these plaza shops and test. We don't say people should stop smoking, but they should be aware. They must test these loose cigarettes and check if there's an ingredient that causes them to be so addicted to these cigarettes, because we've got relatives, we've got friends who died from complications of cigarette smoke. Some ended up with cancer of the esophagus, some ended up with cancer of the lungs, others died from complications of chronic bronchitis, which is a respiratory disease, because of cigarette smoke. Mm. They are very, very addictive. And
are you talking about all cigarettes? Are you talking about some? I just want to get something clear. Hold on, Pinky. I just want to be clear about the scope of your critique. Okay. All cigarettes, yonke, or just some cigarettes? Are some more bad than others?
I think they should test all cigarettes, you say that, and especially in the townships. I think the kind of...
So not just the Hong Kong ones, also you want to get rid of Courtly,
no,
Rothmans, whatever. I don't even know what people smoke anymore.
No, we can't control people like that, but we have to educate them. We have to make them aware that, especially in the townships, what I noticed, have you ever heard of a phrase, smoker's cough? Have you ever heard of that?
How does it go? How does it go, Pinky? What? How does the cough sound? Sinesh Lanchal, I'm going to give you a full minute to respond. The public is deeply divided. Some people philosophically because they don't like an incursion on freedoms. Others because they think this government on this particular occasion has not taken an evidence-informed decisions. And then there are others who are smokers and who like their freedom who don't necessarily support you because they think that to ask for scientific proof that this thing compromises your system is disingenuous because it's a truism that it compromises your system. What are your final reflections for today?
Look, I think some of the issues that Pinky touched on are quite crucial. But I think right at the end, she said something important where she stated that, you know, we should focus rather on education, you know, instead of, you know, completely banning things and adopting a paternalistic approach to issues, you know, focus on education. I mean, I was discussing this with someone earlier on that, you know, countries that have been successful in dealing with curbing the spread of the virus have taken their citizens into their confidence, countries such as New Zealand and South Korea. You know, so that is an aspect that government could have looked at. You know, I mean, because what people are now saying is looking at the issue of smoking beyond lockdown and saying it should be banned even then because of the risks that it poses to not only smokers and non-smokers. And I think, and we raise this in our court papers again, that is a discussion that can be had post-lockdown but done through the appropriate channels, through Parliament, and let it be legislated in that fashion. But as things currently stand and with this particular issue, we are still of the firm view that government did not have significant data or sufficient reasons, rather, to implement this ban. I mean, if you look at what is stated by Dr. Fosalinos, the only doctor with a peer-reviewed study, he stated that when you look at data from Europe, America, and Asia, there is no correlation between the virus and smoking, and that is something that I think should have been the point of departure. I mean, we accept that smoking is bad for you, but so are many other things. I mean, now it gets even more tricky because, I mean, we've seen the lifting of the ban on the sale of alcohol, for instance, and we know that that poses its own issues for the immune system and things of that nature, and can also lead to other comorbidities. I mean, it has also been linked with, for instance, diabetes. Now, we know that diabetes, there's been a high percentage of people who have been infected with the virus and who have had severe sort of implications as a result of contracting the virus, who are diabetic. So, you know, there are a lot of things that would have had to have been looked at by government prior to, you know, implementing a ban of this nature.
Okay.
And I think this is where they have failed, in that there's a lot of arbitrariness in as far as how they have applied this ban.
As always, wonderful engaging you. It's going to be interesting to see what happens to this particular case. Really important, some important legal principles at stake. Sinesh Lanhla Nguni, who is chairperson of FITA, thanks so much for coming on the program.
Always a pleasure, Eusebius. Have a good day.